horizon, still a few miles away, but getting larger in the windshield. There were neighborhoods on either side of the highway, and the landscape turned decidedly urban. John and Solange continued to talk until John noticed the Copley Square Back Bay exit sign. "That's our exit," he announced. Solange looked to her left and saw a large monument on a hill in an open area. "What is that?" she asked. John slowed the Hummer to get a better look. "It's Bunker Hill." He stopped the truck. "It's certainly the historical choice, and it looks like it might be the highest point in the area." He took the exit onto Route 1. John found Boston was easy to navigate when he did not have to obey the road and highway directions. Ignoring one-way streets and do-not-enter signs, they pulled up to Bunker Hill 1 minute later. It was a beautiful spring day in Boston. The temperature was in the 50s, and a slight breeze came off the water. They walked up the hill to the monument, taking stock of their situation and location. "It's certainly high up, but I wouldn't live here. I'd be in Beacon Hill or Back Bay. There are larger homes, fireplaces. It's a lot closer to those buildings." John pointed towards downtown. Solange looked around the monument. The grass was overgrown and full of weeds, like every other location in the world. "I can imagine how beautiful this area was." She swept her hand across the mangy hillside. There was trash on the sidewalks, and thick, rotting leaves covered the ground. "It's going to get worse. The plants are going to consume everything. It's another reason we have to make our decision on where to go soon." He looked around the monument area. "We have 2 boxes of those starter logs, right?" "Yes," she replied. "Let's put a fire here, leaving a note to meet us over in the park I mentioned. We can start a fire in the park, too. I like this spot for a fire, but we'll have more luck over there." He pointed towards the city. "We're not trying to signal a ship." He moved his head towards the water. "We're trying to find people." They agreed on the plan and looked for a way to start a signal fire. John clapped his hands. "I've got it." "What?" Solange asked him. "Let's get one of the dumpsters that are behind a restaurant or building. We can set it out in the open, light it on fire. The metal will contain the flames, and hopefully there will be enough trash to sustain the fire for a while." Solange nodded, smiling as he described his idea. It did not take them long to locate a dumpster. Solange wrapped a rope around the bin and secured it to their tow hitch. John eased the Hummer forward and towed the dumpster the short distance to the bottom of the monument. "I'm not worried about being on top of the monument hill. The fire is going to smoke like crazy. I want to get it into an open area so we don't set the neighborhood on fire." John and Solange worked well together, methodically and intelligently. They knew they did not have a deadline for getting this fire started. It was only 11:30. John siphoned gas from a nearby car and poured the gas into the dumpster. The trash was from a Bunker Hill museum located across the street from the monument. It contained boxes, wood frames, and plastic. The dumpster lid was shut, keeping out rain and snow. The trash had not decomposed over the winter. Solange lit a singles newspaper from a nearby machine and threw it into the gasoline-soaked trash. The gas caught immediately, and the signal fire pumped thick black smoke into the air. John put his arm around Solange. "Why don't you get lunch? I'm going to find a few chairs or tables from the museum to throw on the fire." He made his way over to a nearby building, smashing a window and unlocking the door. Solange pulled off her work gloves along with a pair of yellow latex gloves underneath. She tossed both sets of gloves into the trunk. She jumped in the Hummer and started the car. The sun was shining and the interior was warm. She let the warmth soak into her bones. It may have been 50 outside, but it was still chilly to her. The warm car was a welcome change. She pulled their lunch out of the back seat, a wicker picnic basket with a leather strap. She unhooked the strap and grabbed the large sausage sandwich made on a baguette. It was already sliced in half. She had a bag of potato chips, a chocolate bar, and 2 sodas. John opened the door and got into the car. "Oh, man, does this feel good," he said to her. He flipped his gloves into the back seat and squirted sanitizer onto his hands. "Soda? How did you sneak 2 sodas?
"The women are controlling the camp. Todd thinks he controls the food.
I asked Emily for the chips and soda. It was easy. John grabbed one of the plastic bottles. He twisted off the top and took a long drink. He closed his eyes and grinned with satisfaction. I don't care that it's warm. That is delicious. Soda was a dwindling resource and rarely used. I cannot get used to the U.S. version made with corn syrup. I enjoy the ones I used to have made with sugar. She popped a chip in her mouth, another soon-to-be-lost luxury. Let's drive over to the other park while we eat. He put the car into drive. There are better areas to sit outside and enjoy our picnic. There may be better places, but I am not leaving this warm car. I do not like the cold. She buckled her seatbelt as they drove lazily towards Back Bay. They took a ramp up to the highway, over the bridge, and onto Cambridge Street. So that's why you want to go to Hawaii. You don't care about anything other than not being cold. It is a reason, just as valid as any other. She ate another chip and drank her soda. 46. Dan sat on the balcony of his house reading Dubliners by James Joyce. He tried to alternate his reading between popular, less sophisticated novels and ones he considered classics. The other people he lived with were inside arguing about when to leave Boston for a warmer climate. He wanted a break from the discussion. It was the same fight day in and day out. He excused himself and retired to the second-story deck, outfitted with comfortable chairs and a dining table. The sun felt warm as he read. He was in jeans and a thick flannel shirt. He wore a red, white, and blue cotton-knit stocking cap, a habit picked up over his last decade in New England. It was not Dan's house. It was owned by a friend who died from the rapture while vacationing in Bali. Dan knew it had a half-dozen fireplaces, heavy stone walls, and was a perfect place to ride out a New England winter while he and his new friends figured out how to survive the apocalypse. Dan lost his wife and 5 children to the rapture. He worked part of the year in Boston and lived the rest of the year in Seattle. He and his family were in Rhode Island when the disease struck. Dan was a man of power and influence, but he could not save his family. His private plane was grounded. The hospitals were closed. When his family died like so many others, he was left to figure out how to survive a Boston winter without food, water, or electricity. He was a laid-back guy from Seattle, but possessed a work ethic that rivaled anyone alive. Blessed with a gift for leadership, and backed by a relentless pursuit of excellence, perfection, and knowledge, his talents and drive brought him unfathomable success. Success that died with the rapture. Stripped of his prestige and wealth, Dan focused on survival. He carefully studied potential houses and locations before choosing his friend's house in the Back Bay area of Boston. He learned how to fish and catch seafood in the abandoned Boston Harbor. He kept physically fit without burning too many calories and jeopardizing his food. Dan managed every controllable aspect of his life. The other people who survived and currently lived with Dan did not fall into the controllable category. Dan met Ryan, a lawyer, after the military disappeared from Boston. The men decided to merge their survival operations. Those were the words Ryan used to describe the partnership. Dan, though he did not particularly like Ryan, knew 2 people had a better chance of surviving the winter than 1. The men met Karen, a pediatric nurse, several weeks later. She was wandering the streets, dehydrated and hungry. Lucinda was the 4th survivor. They did not know her last name, what she did, or from where she came. She had a Texas accent, but claimed to be from Medford, Massachusetts. She was sitting on their back steps one afternoon when the group returned from scavenging. She walked through the back door that afternoon, and had yet to leave the house since. Dan spent most of his time looking for wood, fuel, water, and food. They had lobster traps set in the harbor. He checked the traps and fished when the weather agreed. He tried to stay out of the house as much as he could. When he was home, he read quietly in his room or outside. He needed his alone time today. 5 months cramped into a house with people he did not like was exhausting. Dan did not know what to do, but he would not accept a life with Lucinda and Ryan. He was going to break away. Karen was a good person, a hard worker, and did not bother him. He had already asked her to leave with him. Dan finished the third short story in his new book, used a picture of his family as a bookmark, and looked at the city. He saw a thick black stream of smoke billowing from across the Charles River. It was a clear day. The electricity had been off for months. There was no way a fire started spontaneously. "Survivors," he muttered to himself. Dan dropped the book on his chair and ran inside. "There are people in the city. They just started a fire across the river." The group sitting at the table looked at him, mouths agape. Ryan was the first to stand. "Let's check it out." He walked to a closet and retrieved his coat and a gun. Karen and Lucinda remained seated. "Do we know if they're friendly?" Lucinda asked in her heavy Texas accent. "I see a fire burning. It might not be people at all, but there isn't any other explanation." "No, I don't know if they're friend or foe," Dan told her. "Would you like to stay here while Ryan and I check it out?" It was not a real question. Lucinda was not leaving the house.
"I'd like to go."
Karen stood. "But I understand if we leave Lucinda behind, you know, to be safe." Karen went to the closet. She was in her late 20s. 9 months ago, she was a morbidly obese night shift nurse at Boston Children's Hospital. Today, she was down 120 pounds and excited for an adventure with Dan and Ryan. Lucinda was scared.
"Lucy, stay here. We got this."
Dan grabbed a walkie-talkie from the table next to the door, turned it on, and set it in front of Lucinda. "We'll keep you up to date." Lucinda's shoulders, tense with worry, eased slightly.
"You don't mind?"
she asked, calming at the prospect of staying in the house.
"We'll go. You stay here. I'd ask you to watch for more activity, but whatever."
Ryan used a tone of derision and shame towards the woman. Lucinda barely stepped out of the balcony, let alone the house. They left Lucinda behind and headed to Dan's truck, a four-door Ford pickup parked behind the house. It was four-wheel drive, could haul or move anything, and the cab warmed faster than any car manufactured. At least Dan believed it warmed faster than any car he ever owned.
"I bet it's tourists. I could swear the fire is at Bunker Hill," Dan joked.
He pulled the gear on the steering wheel and they drove towards the smoke. He headed onto Storo Drive. The road gave them the best view up the river and the source of the smoke. Ryan was looking towards the fire when he noticed a neon green vehicle on the highway bridge going south.
"Holy shit! Dan, Karen, it's a Hummer! A bright green Hummer!"
Ryan swore like a sailor. Dan slammed on the brakes, swung the truck around, and tried to keep the glowing green vehicle in his sights. His truck was headed on an intercept pattern at North Station. Dan leaned on his horn, accelerating to get ahead of the slow-moving Hummer. Solange and John drove casually down the highway, enjoying their conversation, chips and soda.
"Did you hear that?"
Solange asked. Her ears were younger than John's.
"What?"
She rolled down her window. The sound of a car horn blared. John slowed the Hummer to a stop. He was about to enter a tunnel, but stayed outside of the mouth and in the sunlight. He did not see another car, but he heard the horn.
"Do you see anyone?" he asked Solange.
They were in an artificial valley, a walled part of the highway just before the tunnel. They had two ways to look, up or back. John sat down in his seat.
"Well, I'm going to eat my sandwich. Let's give them a little while. They saw us. They signaled us."
He shrugged his shoulders and took a bite of the hoagie.
"It is delicious, right? Todd is becoming a master at the bread."
She continued to enjoy her half of the sandwich. They ate their lunch in silence, waiting for whoever honked the car horn to find them. Dan stopped the truck. Ryan stood in the flatbed looking over the edge of the road that entered the tunnel. Ryan's face appeared in the open driver's window.
"They're stopped at the entrance to the tunnel. I could swear they're eating lunch or something. If I had to guess, they heard the horn and are waiting for us."
"Get in, and let's go meet our new friends."
Dan looked at Karen as they waited for Ryan to get back into the truck. "Are you ready for this?" he asked her.
"I was getting a little tired of the three of you. It'll be nice to meet new faces."
She smiled. Ryan got into the passenger seat. He pulled a handgun from his jacket pocket and made sure the safety was off, and a round was in the chamber.
"Seriously?"
Dan asked him.
"I don't trust anyone."
Ryan did not look at Dan when he replied. He continued to check his weapon. "We have food, water, heat. Those are things people might want to steal. They aren't taking them from me."
Dan shook his head. "What an idiot," he thought.
Dan put the car in reverse and drove backwards across the causeway. He went up the exit ramp for 93 South and hung a sharp right. He could see the green Hummer idling just outside of the tunnel. He accelerated to a moderate speed before parking next to a man and a woman eating sandwiches and drinking soda.
"Are they having a picnic?"
Karen stuck her head between the front seats. She faced away from the green car so her lips could not be read.
"I swear to God, they're having a picnic."
John waved and rolled down his window. The situation was surreal. John made the universal roll-down-your-window signal by twirling his hand in a circle. Ryan obliged, as did Karen from the rear seat.
"Hello. My name is John, and this is my friend Solange. We came from New Hampshire looking for survivors. We represent a group of 20-some people."
"And a dog," Solange said behind him.
"Oh, and a dog. And we're hoping to meet people like you to invite you to join us."
He took a quick bite of his sandwich. John had a feeling he would not have the opportunity to finish his lunch once they got out of the Hummer. He was starved from the morning and wanted to eat as much of his sandwich as possible. Karen spun around again.
"Did he say they have a dog?"
Dan turned off the truck and opened his door. He walked around the front of both cars and towards Solange's side of the Hummer. She saw him coming to her door. She opened it and got out. John put his sandwich down. His jaw was on the floor when he recognized who was walking around the front of his car.
"Hello. My name is Dan."
Solange accepted his handshake.
"Solange Wright. Very nice to meet you, Dan."
"You don't sound like you're from New Hampshire."
He gave her a quizzical look.
"I am from Ecuador. I was studying at Virginia Commonwealth University and became stranded in Richmond, Virginia. I met John and his family as they made their way to New Hampshire."
"Well, again, my name is Dan. I have two friends, Karen and Ryan, talking to John through the window. We have one more survivor named Lucinda. She's shy and decided to stay in our house until we discovered the source of the thick black smoke.
We lit the fire. We were finishing our lunch and driving to Beacon Bay to start a similar signal fire."
"It's Back Bay or Beacon Hill," Dan corrected her with a smile.
"Although I guess it's not really anything anymore." Dan took a step back, shook his head, and continued to smile. He was suddenly overwhelmed by the situation.
"You're real. You're actually survivors. And there are over 20 of you?"
He touched his fingers to his eyes.
"I know it's not over. I know this is still a nightmare, but..."
Tears rolled down his face. Solange opened her arms and stepped into the tall man's grasp.
"So many times we debated leaving. Debated trying to make a break for Florida or back to my home in Seattle."
He squeezed her tightly. "But we stuck to our guns. We knew there have to be other people. And we gave it until May." He stopped talking. Solange was a good judge of character, and she liked Dan instantly. She knew he needed a moment, a few seconds to absorb the realization that he was saved. She had been rescued herself. She knew the feeling. She understood his elation and relief. Dan let her go.
"Let's get you back to our house. I can jump in with... John, is it? Ryan can drive the truck."
Dan looked over the hood of the Hummer.
"Hey, Ryan, slide over and drive the truck back. I'll jump in here and get them over to the house."
Ryan grimaced.
"Well, John, I'll see you in a second,"
Karen said to her new friend. Solange got into the Hummer after waving to the truck. Ryan had yet to say a word to John or Solange. He sat in the front seat, his eyes narrow. "I look forward to talking about options and making some decisions.
he told John before rolling up his window and moving to the driver's seat. Karen waved from the back window. The rear door of the Hummer opened, and the tall man got in. His hand shot through the gap in the front seat.
John, very nice to meet you. Dan Couples.
Hi, Dan. John tried to keep his cool as he shook the man's hand.
I'm a big fan.
Solange gave John an odd look.
What do you mean?
She asked him, looking back at their passenger.
Dan is a pretty famous person. He's the quarterback of the New England Patriots.
John did not let go of Dan's hand.
Seriously, I'm a huge fan.
Thank you. I appreciate it. But none of that means very much now. I'm just a survivor like the rest of you. He nodded at John, acknowledging the compliment.
John finally let go of Dan, turned around, and caught his breath.
He took a moment to compose himself.
Dan Couples. I'm in a car with Danny Couples, he screamed in his head.
John was like a little kid meeting one of his idols. He calmed down enough to ask his new passenger,
where am I going?
John tried to sound collected, but his voice cracked a bit from excitement. Pull a U-turn. We'll pick up the exit ramp a little ways back and take Storrow Drive to our house. Boston is pretty easy to get around when you don't have to follow the directional laws.
That's what I said.
John laughed. He actually giggled. Solange gave him a stern look, similar to the one she gave him after his bad dancing at the Manchester airport.
I know you're going to have to repeat this to our group, but what's your story? Where are you from? You've hooked up with other survivors in other cities?
Dan was ecstatic to meet new people.
This nightmare may be coming to an end after all.
Solange gave their background. She did not give details about their future plans, focusing instead on the events that led to today. She was at the part about meeting the group in Washington, D.C., when John pulled up to a large stone house. He parked next to the truck Ryan drove.
This is it, Dan said, waiting for Solange to finish.
I've been here since October. I gave serious consideration to driving across the country to get back home to Seattle, but the reports I read about the Midwest discouraged me. I knew the owner of this place. He and his wife were good friends. They got stuck in Bali. I had a place in Rhode Island, but it was huge, and there was no way I could keep it heated. I also wanted to find some people, any people, and I knew the city was the best place to do that. They exited the Hummer.
Do you have food? John asked him.
Oh, yeah, we have plenty of food. We have some lobster traps. So will anyone be offended if I bring my lunch inside and finish eating? I'm starving.
John cut him off and held up the picnic basket.
No.
Dan shook his head and chuckled. Don't worry about it. We have plenty of food. It might actually calm Ryan down. He's worried you're here to steal our supplies.
They went into the building through a back door. The house had a reverse floor plan. The first level was a four-car garage. Stairs led to an empty floor that used to be a laundry, gym, home office, and a half bath. John and Solange followed Dan up the stairs to the true third floor, a beautiful room with a gigantic fireplace and open kitchen concept. The ceilings were low, and the room seemed warm, warmer than what a single fire, even the giant fireplace roaring in the wall, should have allowed. I picked this house because my friend was very into green energy. There are a few solar panels on the roof, and he had electric heat on this floor powered by the solar cells. I would have been dumb and made the ceiling vaulted in here, you know, create a dramatic effect. He kept them low with double insulation. The fireplace, the heaters. We were comfortable during the harsh winter.
Ryan and Karen waited to speak, not wanting to be rude.
Hello,
Karen said, rushing over to hug Solange.
Oh my God, this is incredible.
She moved to John and gave him a hug. Ryan was not as warm. He stepped forward to shake their hands. Lucinda stood alone, waiting for an introduction. She was shifting from one foot to the other nervously.
Hello, John Dixon, John said to her, stretching out his hand.
Lucinda. Danny calls me Lucy sometimes, but he's the only one I let do that.
She looked down at the floor as she shook his hand.
Glad to meet y'all.
We have so much space, so please make yourselves at home.
She shook Solange's hand. I was tickled when Karen radioed me and said she'd found two more survivors. Ryan, she turned to him, why don't you check the lobster traps? Let's have some lobster tonight. I know we're sick of it, but it's been a few days, and I bet these people would love some. She was frenetic in her mannerisms. Would you mind if we sat down and finished our lunch? John and I have been working all morning, either driving or trying to find you. We're very hungry. Solange looked towards John, who held up their basket. 5 minutes later, they were seated around a table, except for Lucinda, who would not sit down. She was too jumpy and stood in the kitchen area. She prepared lunch for her group while John and Solange ate. John gave a quick recount of their tribe's story. "So your three brothers survived?" Ryan asked. John could tell he was suspicious. "Yes, and my three sons and two nephews," John told him. "I don't buy it," Ryan said, leaning back in his chair. "None of that makes sense." The lawyer shook his head. "So you think Solange and I are making up our story?" John asked him. "I don't know. I'm just saying I have a hard time believing that an entire family survived. Ask Karen. She saw thousands of people die, tens of thousands. No way 9 people from the same family lived." Solange did not like Ryan. He was a rude bully. She did not have time for a person like him. "It is more amazing to me that John's sister-in-law, Emily, survived with her husband and sons. You could convince me that a group of brothers survived, and that maybe their children would be resistant. But for a husband and wife, truly unbelievable." Karen stared at John and Solange as they ate. "Where did you get that bread?" She had a tone in her voice that conveyed deep envy. "We don't have bread, or don't make much of it. Where did you get that? It looks so good." John smiled. He could tell she would follow him to the northern provinces of Canada for bread. "My brother Todd has become a bit of an artisan bread baker. He has a pizza oven, makes different kinds every morning." He held the sandwich out to her. "Would you like a bite? Honestly, it's too much food for me." She shook her head. "I'm a little afraid of eating sausage that's probably a year old." She made a face. Solange put her sandwich on her plate and used a nearby knife to cut the remainder in half. "It is fresh sausage made yesterday. Hank and Paul, John's other brothers, killed a moose a few days ago. We are curing most of the meat for steaks, letting it get tender, but we had moose burgers and moose sausage already." Solange handed half of the sandwich to Karen. The nurse accepted the gesture without hesitation. "Oh my God," she said in a thick Boston accent. "This is amazing. Can we go to your camp tonight? How far is it? Can I go there by myself? I'm there. I don't care if you have three fake brothers and claim Paul Bunyan and Shrek are up there making these sandwiches. If there's more bread and sausage..." "Wait a second. Is this cheese? Dan, there is cheese on this sandwich." "There's more, and we can leave whenever. Solange and I are just a search party. We don't plan on staying here more than one night." "Whoa, whoa, whoa, Karen. You just met these people, and now you're willing to take your life in your own hands for a sandwich? I know you used to be fat, but come on." Ryan leaned forward in his chair and turned to John. "So that's your game. You come in and steal people from other groups?" "Ryan, I'm a direct person, so let me be as blunt with you as you appear to be with everyone else. We're a group of survivors. We're living in New Hampshire. We're making plans for our future. He paused. "Solange and I." "Thank you," Solange said to him. "Sure," he nodded to her. "Solange and I made a trip down here to find survivors and ask them to voluntarily join our group. If you don't want to come with us, okay. If you do, you're welcome. We don't have rules. We don't have a grand plan. We still need to figure out how to survive once the cans of soup and boxes of pasta run out. I don't have an agenda. If you don't trust me, I don't really care. Stay here. Live on your own. Drive to Florida. If a person chooses not to come with us, totally their decision. But please understand,
It is anyone's individual decision to make. You make yours, she can make hers.
Nice choice. Join the cult or get left behind.
Ryan narrowed his eyes again, his hands clenched.
Okay, let's just calm down.
Dan put his hands up. Ryan, check the attitude. I understand you're leery of new people, but you have to at least be polite. He looked at Karen.
You're not fat. He didn't mean that.
She nodded to Dan, who knew the fat comments from Ryan stung her.
I guess story time is over. We can catch up later. Let's eat, talk, find out more. Then we can make a decision.
I'm going, Karen said quickly. I can't rot here anymore. They have children. They have families. I want to feel that again. I'm going.
Dan, I respect you more than anyone I've ever met outside of my parents. But this isn't a group decision. This is my life.
Fucking ingrate, Ryan spit at her.
Ryan, calm down.
Dan tried to stop him.
No, no fucking way, Dan. We keep her alive. We find her, fat and helpless, and we give her a warm place and food for, what, 6 months? And now she finds a new sugar daddy and she walks away? You ungrateful bitch.
John's eyes narrowed. He gave Solange a look before turning towards Karen. You're welcome to come with us, Karen. I'm sorry I've caused an issue within your group.
John, it's not your fault. We've been cooped up in this house for months.
It's safe to say that we're four very different people from different walks of life, and our personalities don't mesh as well as they could.
Dan put his hand over Karen's hand resting on the table.
I agree with Karen. I'm ready for a change. A life instead of survival.
Are you out of your fucking head? Ryan said to him.
Dan turned his full attention to Ryan. I'm a laid-back person. You know that. But you also know I'm not going to let you talk to me like that. Karen is right. This isn't a group decision. I speak for myself, and I want to leave this house. I can help these people, but not as much as they can help me. They're making the best of this horrible situation. It's time we started to do the same.
Great. So my choice is to join a group I know nothing about or stay here with crazy Lucinda?
Ryan flipped his thumb over his shoulder towards the frail woman standing in the kitchen. John's knuckles were white, his hands clasped in fists of anger. He did not understand who this person was, and he did not want Ryan's poison near his family. Solange squeezed his leg tightly as Ryan threw insults around the room. She could tell John was ready to pop. She could also tell that neither of them wanted Ryan to come up to Hanover. John stood up from the table.
I've caused a bad situation. I'm sorry. You need to talk as a group. You owe each other that.
Who the fuck do you think you...
John put up his hand as Ryan was talking. I have no idea why you talk to people the way you do. Maybe you're lashing out because you're threatened. Maybe you're just an asshole. I don't know. But I do understand your argument, and you're right. You all need to talk. He turned to Solange. We'll figure out where to go for tonight. Don't worry about us. There's a lot for you to digest. How about we come back tomorrow morning?
Did you seriously just call me an asshole?
Ryan pushed his chair back. Dan stood, too. I think you're right. We could use some time. The four of us owe each other that much. Dan's eyes moved from Karen to Lucinda, then back to John and Solange. Are you sure you can find somewhere to stay?
Dan? This guy comes in here.
Ryan, he's leaving. We can talk about it when they're gone. Let it go. He extended his hand to John. We'll see you tomorrow. John and Solange packed their basket and walked down the stairs with Dan. Hey, the tall, muscular man said to them at the car. Karen and I are coming with you. I'm not sure what Lucinda will do. She has some issues.
It was very nice to meet you, Dan Couples.
Solange gave him a hug. After the hug, Dan pointed down the road. Lucinda mentioned our lobster traps. If you want a few, we're tired of eating them. Our traps are set in the harbor near the aquarium. There are a bunch of big red buoys. You can't miss them. There are hooks on the pier. Just haul them up using the pulley and crank. He pulled a walkie-talkie out of his pocket. Take this. I'll let you know if anything happens before tomorrow morning. John shook his hand and thanked him. Any advice on a cheap room for the night? If it were me, I'd find a church. Most of the back offices have a fireplace. They were built of stone a long time ago and should heat up nicely for the evening. Find a pot, boil some water, enjoy some lobster. I'll see you tomorrow. Hopefully we can talk in a more civil manner. Dan, I'm sorry we caused an argument. Solange and I have been through this before, and we've never had a negative reaction. The people we met in New York were starving. The people in D.C. were desperate for help with three kids under the age of 8. I did not expect to be such a problem. Dan shook his head. You hit the nail on the head. Ryan's a total asshole. I've had to live with him for 6 months. He's scared. Hopefully he'll figure it out because he's a good worker and a strong set of hands. John liked the way Dan thought. I can handle Ryan. We'll figure it out. Keep the radio on, find a warm room. I'm excited to drive to New Hampshire and eat some steak. Dan went back into the house, but spun back around. Where did you get cheese? We have a few goats that give us milk. We also have chickens, and we just found some cows and pigs that survived the winter at a nearby farm. One of our members is a vet. She's confident we can get the cows healthy and producing. Unreal. Dan flashed a smile and slapped the top of the Hummer twice with his palm. He turned to walk inside. We'll see you tomorrow morning. We'll be ready to roll, he yelled over his shoulder. Solange and John got into the Hummer. As soon as the doors were shut, John spun his head to look at Solange. This is unbelievable. I know. Ryan will not fit into our group. No, not that. I just met Dan Couples. Danny frickin' Couples. This is insane. Who is Dan Couples, other than the nice man I just met? I can't talk about this with you, he thought for a second. It's like I just met Pele or Maradona. I am from Ecuador. Maradona is Argentinian. Ugh, Americans. She shook her head. I did meet Pele once, at a reception in Quito. I had a picture taken with him. It was in my bedroom on my desk. He was Brazilian, but I still liked the picture. She stopped for a moment. You know, I do not have anything from my past life. I have some pictures on my tablet. But really, I have nothing. Something triggered her sadness. I miss my family. I loved them all, and I never got to see them in person to say goodbye. We did video chats, but I will never see my home again. She looked at John as he drove the truck towards the piers to get lobster. It makes me sad. I know. He rubbed her shoulder. I know. It's easy for me to forget that I have my sons. I said goodbye to Charleston. I was there when... He stopped. I said goodbye to who I needed to. They got lost on their way to the piers, but eventually pulled up to the water. Boston Harbor was enormous. Luckily, the large red buoys were easy to find. John used a nearby hook to grab the rope, and he wound the rope onto a pulley bolted to the pier. He brought the lobster trap to the surface. There are a dozen lobsters in there, he said excitedly. Let's cook 6 of them and let the rest go. How are we going to get them out of the trap? Look at those claws. Solange took a step back from the edge of the pier. The pulley was on an arm that swung the trap onto the pier. You unhook the carabiner and voila, the top opens and you grab the ones you want. Toss the other ones back. And the claws? Solange made a claw shape with her hand, 2 fingers on the bottom, 3 on top, and made a snipping gesture with the hand. Well, we have to be careful, that's for sure. John spun his head around in search of something. He walked down the pier to search the SUVs in the parking lot. What are you looking for? She asked him curiously, rubbing her hands together. It was much cooler by the water. A stiff breeze blew from the ocean. We need a cooler or a bucket to put the lobsters in. Maybe splash some water on them, too. In the 4th SUV window, he saw what he needed. John pulled a window hammer from his coat pocket, the kind found in car safety kits, and smashed the window of the SUV. He carried the hammer around with him for just such occasions. He pulled a blue cooler with wheels out of the broken back window and wheeled it down the pier. Solange had not touched the lobster trap, not even the carabiner clasp. "Come on," he said to her. He undid the top and flipped it open. The lobsters were not friendly. Some of them began opening and closing their claws. John used two sticks he found on the ground in a chopstick fashion to move 8 large lobsters from the trap to the cooler.
"I thought you said 6.
"I'm hungry."
"How can you be hungry after that big sandwich?"
"I don't know, I'm hungry." "It's no big deal. There are 2 other traps." He used the giant chopsticks to free the 5 smaller lobsters in the trap. "Tomorrow we'll empty the other 2 traps and bring the lobster up to Hanover for a lobster boil." He left the trap on the pier. "You know what? If this dries out, I think we should bring it with us. Maybe we can put it in the flatbed of their truck. We can use this to catch things in Hawaii. This is all coming together." He had his hands on his hips as he looked at the lobster trap on the pier and the red buoys in the water.
"If you are done being proud of yourself, can we find a place to light a fire? I am very cold."
She hugged herself for warmth against the cold sea breeze. They found a church close to the harbor. Dan was right. The office in the back had a large fireplace. It had a giant iron hook made specifically for a pot. Before Solange could ask what they would use for wood, John smashed a wooden pew with an axe from the Hummer. They lit 2 of the starter logs, heaped furniture wood on top, and their little room was warm within a few minutes.
"I saw some restaurants down the street. Maybe I can get a big pot or something to cook these in."
He pointed to the cooler. "You stay here and keep the fire going. Get warm."
"You will get no argument from me."
Solange pulled her chair close to the fire. It did not take John long to find a restaurant, a pot, tongs, and a pan. He snagged a few bottles of white wine, a package of pasta, a jar of minced garlic, olive oil, and a case of Pellegrino sparkling water. He carried everything inside the big pot. He was excited to make lobster pasta, saving a few of the crustaceans for breakfast. He strode into the church in a great mood. He had a beautiful woman, lobster, wine, and fire. What could go wrong?
"Dan radioed," Solange said solemnly. "Lucinda jumped off the porch. She is dead. Ryan stole their truck and fled. Dan and Karen would like to leave. We need to go back to the house."
"Damn." John lowered his head.
"Damn, damn, damn."
They loaded the Hummer and drove to the house. Dan was standing by the back door. He had several boxes stacked, ready to move into the Hummer.
"It's not your fault. It's not our fault. She had issues," Dan said immediately. "I should have known."
"She hadn't left the house in 5 months. When you arrived, she panicked. And when you left, she got worse. She was pacing." Dan stopped to give Solange a quick hug. "Ryan went berserk, yelling and ranting. I don't know why. He was making less sense than she was. Anyway, he storms out, says he's taking the truck to Florida. Karen and I follow him into his room where he starts throwing things in a duffel. Then he storms down the back stairs. Lucy is just saying no, no, over and over again, her hand on her mouth. Karen tells her it's okay, we're all fine. I'm trying to keep Ryan from taking my truck. Not that I cared about the truck, but it was our best vehicle. And, well, I did kind of like the truck. He tries to shove me. He's yelling, I'm yelling, Karen is yelling. We heard a thud." Dan stopped. "Karen and I ran back upstairs. Ryan jumped in the truck and bolted." He dropped his head, shaking it slowly from side to side.
"She didn't want to deal with it. You know, the new world, the way things are."
"I'm sorry," John offered. "I'm truly sorry." "Karen and I spoke, and we decided we can't stay here. I mean, Lucy's body is sitting in the road out front. We have to get out of here." He bent down and picked up 2 boxes. "Do we have room in your truck for our stuff and us?"
"Yeah, here."
John walked around the back and opened the tailgate. He pushed the blue cooler to the side. The salt air smell poured out of the trunk.
"You found the lobster," Dan noted, his voice flat.
Karen was in a fog, moving listlessly through the second floor. She did not have anything to bring other than clothes and a few pictures, but she seemed to be looking for something to pack. "Let's go, Karen. This wasn't our house. It wasn't even our home. It was just some place we shared for a little while." Dan waved her over. "You have your pictures, clothes?" She nodded. "Let's go." He put his arm around her and gave a squeeze. John thought he saw her wince. "Come on. There's nothing we can do here." John felt odd asking, but he did anyway. "Do you have a big cooler? Maybe a few of them?" "Sure, downstairs." Dan nodded. "What's up?" "I know this is going to sound crass, thinking about food, but I want to stop and empty the lobster traps, bring the food to Hanover for dinner. We shouldn't waste it. The least we should do is let them all go."
"We can do that.
I'll drive us over. It'll be faster. I know a shortcut." Dan let go of Karen, picked up two more duffels, and walked down the stairs. Solange followed him out.
"Do we need gas?"
Dan's hands were occupied with duffels, but he motioned with his head. "That SUV is full. Maybe we can siphon it over."
"Dan, are you okay?
You are leaving very quickly." Solange showed concern for her new friends. He threw the duffels in the back and looked at her.
"Solange,
I buried 5 children, my wife, and all of my family. I lost friends and teammates I've known for 15 to 20 years. That is loss, and I mourned when it happened. I'm still grieving. This place? I have no problem walking away. It's a thing. A place that kept me warm. Karen and I made our peace with Lucinda before we called you. I made this decision. I want to move." His eyes brightened. "But thank you for asking. You and John are good people, I can tell." He exhaled a quick sigh. "I can work with anyone. It's something I've had to do my entire life. Work with whoever is put on my team, good person or bad, asshole or friend. I look forward to working with the two of you." He pointed to the SUV. "I'll bring it next to the Hummer, gas tank to gas tank." As Dan moved the SUV, Solange retrieved a tool from the back seat. It was a modified hand baler from a boat. Matt called it the siphoner. Tubes were used to extend both ends of the device, allowing the sucking tube to go to the bottom of the SUV's tank and the baling tube to go into the Hummer. Solange pulled the pump handle up and down and watched the fuel flow from one vehicle to the other.
"You guys have done this before," the man from Seattle commented.
The Hummer was loaded and refueled, the lobsters were retrieved or freed, and the 4 survivors left for Hanover, New Hampshire at 3:30. Karen wept with Solange in the back seat. She lived in Boston her entire life, receiving her nursing degree from Simmons College and working for Boston Children's. Boston was her home, and she never planned to leave. Solange kept an arm around her. Dan and John sat quietly.
"You driving fast enough?"
Dan eyed the speedometer needle touching 100 miles per hour. "Are we in a hurry or something?"
"No," John stammered. "I guess not."
He dropped the speed to 75 and set the cruise.
"You're right. As it gets closer to dark, there might be deer. I'm used to driving as fast as I want. Sorry."
Dan sat comfortably in his seat. Solange and Karen chatted in the back, mostly about Lucinda. Dan put his arm on the seat back to look at them before turning to John.
"So, John, tell me about yourself."
"Maybe it was the fact that Lucinda's death was one more among the billions, or that Karen and Dan knew she was not destined to last very long in the new world. But whatever the reason, they moved on from Lucinda's suicide quickly. Dan talked about the nights he heard her pacing in her room, and the mumbling he could hear through his wall or vent. Karen brought up the days, usually several in a row, Lucinda would stay in her room, crying loudly and screaming if anyone tried to come inside. Lucinda was a mystery, a woman found sitting on their back porch one day like a stray cat, her thick Texas accent asking if they had seen her tour bus or cruise ship. Neither Dan nor Karen knew where she was from or anything about her. They admitted neither could recall Lucinda's last name, a woman they lived with for 6 months, and they did not know anything other than she was scared. Dan admitted he felt horrible, but relieved that Lucinda found peace. It was a hard peace, but not unexpected for a woman so troubled and sad. John brought up Ryan. Neither Dan nor Karen would discuss him. If he comes to his senses and shows up in Hanover, well, we can figure out how to handle the situation. He helped me find fuel, food, and water. Everything else? He was probably one of the worst people I've met in my life. Karen nodded. If I never hear his name again, that will be fine with me. He was a misogynistic, mean, petty jerk, and I'm glad he's gone. He knew Dan loved that truck, but did he take the SUV or any of the other cars? Whatever, he's gone. Ryan was dropped. Solange changed the subject and gave a rundown of the people in camp. She also discussed their plans to fly to Hawaii. "You have a pilot?" Karen asked. "We do," Solange told her. "You think I can make chowder with coconut milk, Dan?" She laughed. "I bet you can," he told her. "I bet you can." They pulled within radio distance of Hanover by 5 o'clock. John called the house and asked if they had dinner made. When he was told, planned but not made, he asked them to get as many pots of water going as possible and to prepare for 2 more mouths for dinner. "Just 2 people?" Todd asked back. "What do you mean, just? We found 2 people. That's great news. One is a nurse. Tell Melanie we don't need her anymore." John smiled in the rear view at Karen. "Yeah, she heard you. Thanks for that, John." The radio clicked. "What about the other person?" "He was a team leader, quarterback type." John laughed. "Great. Tell him we welcome another chief to our ever-growing tribe of chiefs. We'll start the water boiling. You better not have forgotten the steamers." The radio went off. Todd and his damn steamers. No, I did not get him steamers. Unbelievable. We have what, 30 lobsters, and he's going to bitch about not having clams.
"I take it that's your brother?" Karen asked. "He does a horrible New England accent."
"I know. And he's from Hanover." John continued to shake his head. "Steamers. That's going to burn my ass for the rest of our drive." The mood in the car turned jovial as the somber events of the afternoon were put to rest. Karen's and Dan's relief and excitement were palpable. Locked up with a mentally unstable woman and a jerk for 6 months, they were starved for normal people and the bright future this new tribe offered. John took the Lebanon exit to avoid the steep hill on Wheelock Street. He felt he needed to say something to Dan.
"So, you're probably used to people acting strange around you, right?"
"Yes, I get it. Don't worry." Dan was distracted by the carnage on the streets of Lebanon.
"Oh, don't worry. This looting is localized. It didn't get to Hanover," John assured the two of them. "So anyway, please forgive my family and friends if it gets weird. I mean, we grew up in New England."
"I get it. Believe me, I get it." Dan looked at Karen.
"Go ahead. Tell them."
Karen blushed. "I had Dan's poster up in my bedroom." She turned to Solange and mouthed 10 posters, holding up all of her fingers. "I fainted when he and Ryan found me. Honestly, I fainted. And then I woke up and fainted again. I couldn't stop smiling for like a week, and I giggled all the time. I don't think I said anything to Dan for the first month. I just giggled and blushed."
"See? I get it. It won't be worse than Karen. Not a chance it's worse than Karen."
Solange did not understand. She sat in the back seat with a curious look on her face. She glanced at Dan and tilted her head. "Crazy Americans," she thought to herself. They pulled down Main Street in Hanover. Dan was relieved to see the town was intact. He pointed to a restaurant.
"I've eaten there. I came up and did a session with some medical group at Dartmouth. It was low-key. No one knew I was in town. It's a nice place, but too landlocked for me. I need the ocean."
John turned left on Choate Road. There was still some daylight. Karen saw the kids running around the front yard of the big house.
"Oh, my God!"
You do have children. I didn't believe you. Well, I did, but I didn't. It's been half a year, maybe more, since I saw a child.
She put her hands to her mouth and began to cry.
Dan, this is life again. Do you see it? It's life.
The adults were in jackets, standing next to the grill. Steam rose from a large silver pot on the fire. Todd waved, and everyone walked towards the Hummer. John put the car in park and got out.
We've had a good trip. Some bad things happened, but some great things, too, John announced.
We thought you were staying another night,
Emily asked, coming up from behind Todd.
The passenger door opened, and Dan got out. The back doors opened, too, but no one noticed.
The men stopped talking. Emily, who was not much of a football fan, walked over to the tall stranger.
Hello, Emily Dixon. This is my husband Todd.
She turned, assuming Todd followed her to the new person. Todd had a look of wonder on his face. Emily ignored him and extended her hand.
Hello, Dan Couples. Very nice to meet you.
He waved to the other people. Emily moved to Karen.
Welcome, Emily Dixon.
Karen Walker.
Karen's bubbly personality emerged the further from her former living conditions she went.
I was a nurse at Children's, but I haven't seen a child in, well, you know.
She admired the kids playing tag.
Are any of the little ones yours?
Yes, two.
Emily cupped her hands around her mouth.
Jay, Brian, come over here. I want you to meet someone.
The boys came over, as did the rest of the kids.
Hey, everyone, this is Karen.
Hello, Karen.
The kids replied in unison. Jay walked up and touched her on the arm.
You're it.
He smiled.
Oh, no, you didn't.
Karen jumped into a squat, bending her knees and sticking her hands up.
It is on,
she yelled, giving the kids a head start before chasing a little girl. The kids screamed with excitement. John waved Dan over to the group of men.
Hey, everyone. This is Dan.
Ahmed shot forward.
I had you and Randall in 2008. Won my league.
Glad I could help, Dan told him, shaking his hand. It had been a while since anyone had spoken about fantasy football with him.
Seriously, I had no one else, but it didn't matter. Other than a bye week, I crushed everyone.
Dan nodded and smiled. He knew the excitement of meeting Dan Couples would pass after a few days. Melanie walked over. Jacob stood next to her. He was in time out for pushing his sister during the game of tag. Melanie gave Dan a hug.
I have no idea what Ahmed is talking about, but it is very nice to meet you.
She turned to Jacob, elbowing him.
Very nice to meet you, sir,
the young boy said. Dan towered over both of them.
Very nice to meet both of you.
He shook Jacob's hand, smiling at Melanie.
Do you like lobster, Jacob?
He asked. We brought a cooler full of lobster for dinner tonight.
I like crab.
Is it like crab?
I'm from Maryland. I eat a lot of crab.
Not as sweet, but there's more in each one, and it's not as much work to eat.
Yeah, I'll try them.
He looked at Melanie.
Can I go back?
I won't push anyone, I promise.
Go ahead,
she said, smiling as Jacob ran to the kids and Karen.
Let's get those lobsters going,
Todd said, snapping out of his amazement. He stuck his hand out towards Dan.
Todd Dixon.
They shook hands.
Let me help you get those puppies in the water.
He stopped walking.
Butter. We should have tried to make butter.
Damn it, we don't have any.
We can do without,
Dan consoled him. I'm burned out on lobster, but the first few months I was eating it, I didn't miss the butter. You'll get through. They went to the back of the Hummer, each grabbing an end of the cooler.
I enjoyed watching you play.
Todd was not as rabid a football fan as his brothers, but he did enjoy watching Dan. Kelly pulled up in an old red pickup truck as the last lobsters were dropped in the water. She had great news about the health of the cows, two of which were already strong enough to transport. She welcomed the new members.
How long was I gone?
She joked. Everyone enjoyed the lobsters. Some dipped the pieces in garlic olive oil and salt. Others used cocktail sauce, and three little kids made most of the adults gag by using ketchup. Hank tried to take the lobster away when he saw them dipping it in ketchup, but he was talked down.
I'll make them burgers, he pleaded. Dan and Karen were treated to moose burgers instead of lobsters. At the end of the meal, Hank asked people to dump their lobster shells into a pot of water